Welcome to MGO Podcast 8.18. This is going to be all barbecue and maybe a little bit more barbecue. What's up, Ace?
Not a whole lot.
Fired up today.
Oh, yeah.
Fired up. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Barbecue is easy to make.
Oh, God, Brian.
What?
We had a whole discussion about how we weren't going to do this.
You had a discussion about how we weren't going to do this. I had a discussion
with yourself about how you were going to do it anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. So here we are.
So anyway.
Very professional podcast.
Look, I'm just going to get this out here. Barbecue. Get brisket, brine it 1.5% by weight, salt overnight, smoke it. It'll be wonderful. And then every time someone on Twitter from the South's like, you don't know what you're doing, you'll be like, sorry, buddy, wrong. All right, we are actually at Huel's studio. We should tell you who Huel is. Nobody knows who that is. Human Element, the company that will be bringing you a wonderful revamp of the site, for some reason has a studio for audio purposes, and we are in it.
A very comfortable studio. We're on couches right now.
I feel it's luxurious.
Yeah.
I feel like we don't deserve this level of comfort.
No, not at all.
It's a long way from mom's basement. But we are here, so if you need Huel to redesign your website or apparently record a podcast, they will be here for you. Our other sponsors are Underground Printing, Moe's and the Bow Store, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Homeshore Lending, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Deo Bookkeeping, Michigan Law Grad, Defensive Drivers Group, and Peak Wealth Management. All right, Ace.
Last week was good, in my opinion.
That's what we come for, the hard-hitting analysis.
Yes.
These strong takes.
Also thought it was fun.
You can't be upset at me when I do the barbecue thing. This is going to be your...
You didn't give me any sort of lead into that. It's just like, okay, Ace, go.
How long have you been doing this, man?
I should know what to expect.
Yes. This is how it is. This is how we do it.
It's also tough because, you know, 4 games in 4 days. We were talking about this before the podcast. Like, it's tough to remember what happened in what game at this point.
Yeah, I remember DJ Wilson annihilating somebody. It could have been.
That was Purdue.
It was Purdue.
Because they don't know how to handle bigs who can shoot.
Although, we should probably start from the start.
Yes, we should do that.
So
there was a whole plane thing.
The plane thing, which I'm inclined to disregard. Because, like, we found Bart Torvik's site, which is barttorvik.com.
Yes.
And he allows you to...
kind of slice and dice, basically. Yes. Ken Palm numbers. His are slightly different, but same principle.
Same principle, and you can take any arbitrary length of time. And since the Maverick Morgan incident, Michigan is the number 8 team in the country.
Which is pretty good.
And that like includes that Ohio State game, that includes the game at Breslin, that includes the Nebraska game that Michigan won by 6 at home, which isn't like a stellar result, right? So this is just...
And it wasn't great for the defensive numbers in any way whatsoever.
No, but I mean, since the Maverick game, Michigan is at like 95 adjusted defensive efficiency, which is legitimately good, and their offense is off the charts good.
Yes.
So the plain thing is, you know, overcoming that, but it didn't make them into a good basketball team.
Yeah, that was the annoying part of the running narrative of the tournament, is that this is exactly what this team has looked like for over a month now.
Yeah, and I feel like the team is probably annoyed by our running narrative of why that happened. One Maverick Morgan.
Yes.
But it's true.
I mean, they have acknowledged that they kind of needed that kick in the ass a little bit to get going.
Such a sick burn.
It was, I mean, what made it effective was it was incredibly on point.
We're trying to get together a Maverick Morgan t-shirt.
Yes, we are.
We have to get his permission, so he might turn us
down. It's probably not going to happen. I wouldn't hold your breath.
If he's got a sense of humor, we'll see. But Michigan comes in and plays Maverick Morgan, in fact, in the first game.
Yes, they do. And shuts him down.
Well, shuts him down and shuts Illinois almost out in the first, you know, half of the first half at 31 to 11 at one point.
Yeah, they jump out to a 15-4 lead like mere hours after getting off a plane.
Right, like which one of these teams like got off a plane
wearing their practice jerseys?
Right. The most surreal thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, the two-tone just like looks like they just threw an AAU team out there.
Right, or like
tournament.
It's like a YMCA team that's in the Big Ten tournament and happens to be torching Illinois. Not that hard to do.
Apparently. Ugh, man. Yeah, they're not good.
But one of the takeaways from this is that Malcolm Hill, who was a first-team All-Big Ten player, or was he second team? Doesn't matter. Was utterly shut down by Zach Irvin.
Yeah, 4 points, 1 of 8 shooting, 3 turnovers, 1 assist. Irvin's shown, I mean, between that and then you go to the Purdue game, not to get too far ahead, but Irvin can guard both interior and perimeter. His ability to flip between those two things, what he can do on switches.
Well, he's checking
his
Nigel
on-ball defense. Yeah, he can play a post defense possession against Nigel Hayes.
I mean, but
he
Nigel Hayes is kind of like
he's a perimeter-oriented big. That was a nice matchup for Michigan. Yeah. But for him to shut down Hill, because Hill's got a very diverse game. I mean, he showed up as a freshman with like a pretty refined mid-range game. So for Zach Irvin to be able to completely lock him out, the only player in double figures for Illinois through the whole game was Tracy Abrams. It took Tracy freaking Abrams going off for 23 points. To keep them in that. Unlike some pretty tough shots.
A lot of those were, yeah.
And Tracy Abrams is not normally a tough shot maker. He takes them.
Or an any shot maker.
Yeah, but he's never been like a sharpshooter. And that was the only thing keeping Illinois from losing by like 35.
And so the Irvin defense thing is something that I kind of mentioned in the game column, the games column.
Yes. Because
if you go back to those Michigan State games, Miles Bridges, who's a certain lottery pick, is... You know, he's got 15 points, but it takes him 17 shots to get there. He has a bunch of turnovers. So the two games against Michigan, Bridges has O ratings of 94 and 90.
Yeah.
And that is a huge win against one of the best players in the league. And this was the point at which Zach Irvin was, like, skunked at Breslin. And everybody is on him, and we're kind of failing to see as a fan base the way this defense is coming together and how important Zach Irvin is to it.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about there was a mailbag post Minnesota where a lot of people were asking why Duncan Robinson would not starting over Zach Irvin, and defense was the main reason there. Also, that you get Duncan Robinson better matchups coming off the bench. But Zach Irvin's defense, to add to that, he has completely shut out Dakota Mathias, who is a huge part of Purdue's offense. He is their three-point sniper.
Yeah, they didn't get off.
And he got nothing against Michigan in either of their games.
Yeah.
He was 1 for 6.
Closeout city, baby.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're really, again, skipping ahead, but the very first possession of the Wisconsin game, Abdur-Rahman closes out perfectly timed very hard on Zach Showalter and makes him step in and take a leaning forward, like the crazy shot that Derek Walton hit against Purdue that was really dang lucky, but like that shot, but from two.
Right, and it goes off the front of the rim, and I'm like, all right.
Yeah, it was like the ideal start to that game. It was, okay, if we run their guys off the line, things are going well.
But that is moving ahead. I think we've put the Illinois game to bed.
Yeah, they're not great.
So Michigan moves on to the second round where they face Purdue.
The one seed
who they beat at Chrysler with Mo Wagner going absolutely ape.
Yes.
And Isaac Haas gets in this game and at Chrysler, and he misses like 4, 5, 6 bunnies.
Yeah, like they were doing a decent job of making him a little uncomfortable, but he was not hitting shots that he normally at least hits a decent amount of the time.
And in this game, he is not missing those shots.
Yeah, he's 8 for 10.
And this is a bad thing. And then DJ Wilson blows him off the floor again.
Yeah, apparently Wilson goes in at halftime and tells John Beilein, I want that matchup and I don't want help.
No, this is...
I'm getting ahead of myself again.
But this is just Isaac Haas not being able to play because Michigan's offense is too much for him.
Yes, I mean, Wilson... and what was different in this one was they weren't shooting well from three.
No.
Michigan goes 6 for 25 on the game.
And beats Purdue.
Because DJ Wilson goes 9 for 11 on two-pointers.
And, you know, he gets matched up on Haas because they're doing that switching thing.
Yes.
And twice he just blows by him for layups.
Yeah.
And... they got to stop doing the switching thing, or they got to put Haas on the bench, and they eventually pick putting Haas on the bench. How many minutes did Haas have in this game?
Haas ends up playing only 15 minutes.
How many points?
17.
17 points in 15 minutes.
And they can't keep him on the floor.
And they can't keep him on the floor because of D.J. Wilson doing what Mo Wagner did in the
first. Yeah, they just started running pick and pops with him. And as soon as Haas started closing out,
he was done.
Just walked right by him.
Yeah, and it's we haven't ever seen Michigan have this kind of five-out Pitsnoggle offense.
No, nothing even close, really.
I mean,
Jordan Morgan was not this. He was a lot of things, but he was not this.
No. And you just see like how it discombobulates people. And then moving on to the Minnesota game, the third game, Reggie Lynch, who is the top shot blocker in the country on a permanent basis,
yes,
gets zero.
None.
Because he's out on the perimeter checking everybody.
Xavier Simpson gets by him for a layup because he's so concerned with Michigan's perimeter attack.
Yeah, and it's you can see like as soon as Walton kind of took off and Wagner and Wilson became kind of the equal shares in the offense. So as Irvin's usage decreases and they come up, and it's really like on any possession, any one of the five guys could be taking a shot. It becomes just impossible to check because you can't hide anyone defensively. You can't just do what Baylor does and hide your shot blocker in the post.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to give up open threes all day. And since literally everybody on Michigan's team is hitting them at a near 40% clip, except Zach Irvin,
who is now heating up, at the very least.
You know, his three-point shooting,
it's always going to be a little streaky, most likely, but he's done fewer hero ball chucks and more catch and shoot stuff, or at least he's also just getting, they're designing it more so he's at least, if he's shooting off the dribble, going left or right.
All right. I want you to pull up Zach Irvin, and I want you to pull up the Illinois game, and I want you just to read off his 2 points shots. So just give them to me. Give them to me in order in the Big Ten tournament.
He was 6-for-8 against Illinois.
6-for-8 against Illinois.
5-for-9 against Purdue.
5-for-9 against Purdue.
A perfect 4-for-4 against Minnesota.
4-for-4 against Minnesota.
And 4-for-6 against Wisconsin.
4-for-6 against Wisconsin. And late in that Purdue game, he's got the ball, and I'm like, oh, God, no. He got the ball. And he blows by Vince Edwards for a layup. He does it at the beginning of overtime as well.
Yes.
And he's remember that period when he was a sophomore and everybody was injured? And it's a terrible basketball team. And towards the end of the Big Ten season, Zach Irvin is upping his assist rate. He's getting to the bucket. He's becoming an all-around player.
There's still a stray Zach Irvin is happening tag on the site from when this was initially happening.
When the offense was like Zach Irvin and Spike, right? And,
yeah.
And he was all four bananas at the same time. And he
was productive and not like wildly inefficient.
No, and he looked like this player.
Yeah.
And finally, we're seeing him round into an all-around defense, offense, and in the Big Ten tournament, he started rebounding and had some man, some...
He had at least five defensive boards in every game.
So we had Walton kind of take off midway through the season, and now, I don't know if this is a takeoff for Irvin because he's still shooting about 33% from three.
Yeah.
But he's gone from a guy who you're like, no, to a useful part of the offense and a linchpin of Michigan's improved defense.
Yeah. I mean, he really is probably the most important player on their defense right now. And he has settled into a role that he can play with a lot of efficiency.
And he was key in the Wisconsin game because, you know, Wagner's not having a good day. He's struggling with Hap. I mean, Hap wasn't particularly effective,
no,
even against Wagner. But when they switched Wilson onto him, he basically evaporated.
Yes.
And Irvin made that possible because he was able to check Hayes.
Yeah. And Hayes had a relatively efficient game, but in the kind of way where, like, if that happens, you're totally okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, if Nigel Hayes is hitting face up, like, 18 footers. Sure.
He was taking
it's better than Bronson Canning pulling up from three.
Yeah, he was taking a lot of shots where I was like, okay, fine, that we can live with that. And then he hit them because he's good at bad shots.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of what Irvin is too. Irvin is also good at bad shots.
Yeah. I mean, that mid-range jumper is really part of his arsenal now.
Yeah, but apparently he's managed to become efficient over the past four games. Hopefully he can carry that into the tournament. And we haven't really mentioned Mar/Rock yet.
No. He's still a guy who kind of he faded a little bit the last two games, mm-hmm. wasn't as involved, but he was great against Illinois. He's been excellent just getting out in transition. The dunk at the end of the Wisconsin game was him reading just the right time to just take off, for a long outlet pass. His defense, he had some lapses against Bronson Koenig, but otherwise...
There were a number of plays in the Wisconsin game where two guys were trying to go to one guy.
And that was to jump back off topic for a second, that was the most important thing about Wilson going, I want to guard Ethan Happ and I don't want help, is that they didn't have to worry about those rotation issues anymore, and they were gone in the second half.
Yeah.
And Koenig did not have a three in the second half.
Miraculously.
Yeah. Somehow. Bronson Koenig did not shatter our souls. And that's real nice.
We have a Slack chat, and in the Slack chat we say things that are not our actual opinions.
Twitter appropriate?
just sometimes we say things that we need to say, and there was a lot of swearing at Bronson Koenig.
At the end of the first half, maybe?
Yeah, not because he's like a bad person or...
But he's just the Wisconsin guard that you hate because he does things that hate him.
Yeah, well, he hits like 80% from three against Michigan.
Yeah, it's just how it goes.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, continue talking about the Big Ten tournament. Did you know the black and white striped referee uniform seen on the field today was created at Moe's? In the early days of football, officials wore white dress shirts, bow ties, and beret-type hats. But when an Arizona quarterback confused Ypsilanti's Lloyd Olds for a player and mistakenly passed him the ball, he asked his friend George J. Moe to make a distinctive shirt to set him apart. The new striped uniform was effective, but hated by fans. Olds was met with plenty of boos from the crowd when he first wore it in 1921, and more when he called targeting. Moe's Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at mostsportshops.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew.
But Brian, we podcast in silence.
You are right. But each day, Andrew Deogracias used to go to his corporate consulting job, where each day he felt the darkness.
Andrew is a good worker. He would be a better worker if you let him work in silence.
But each day he felt the blackness. Each day he shoveled numbers to feed the furnace. Each day he worked as hard as he can. But he could stand the silence no more. It occurred to him one day that his work could not stop the darkness, nor the blackness, the black hand that massages as I speak. So he started his own bookkeeping company.
That does not sound like working.
Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services. He finds others, usually fellow Wolverines, who left the darkness but need a little help.
Andrew Deogracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the blackness.
But Ace, he'd rather work for guys like us, keeping us from missing filing deadlines and handling onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, he could help us with those deliverables, which you don't usually get from a bookkeeper.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No. He is an independent freelancer, so he'll do the work himself. And Andrew's offering a deal to Michigan alumni. One free month. Just mention the promotion code each day we work when contacting him. Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. That's DEO bookkeeping.
Keep it.
That's deobookkeeping.com.
Best ad read ever.
Welcome back. More Big Ten Tournament talk. We also haven't mentioned Derek Walton.
I knew as soon as he started laughing, like, yep, we're on to the Walton section.
Who put up 29-9 against first-team All-Big Ten Nate Mason.
Can we get a recount, please?
And Michigan has these dead legs. This is their third game of the tournament. Minnesota's on number two. And in the second half, there are these possessions where nobody is doing anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dan Dockich is losing his mind because it's terrible offense. I'm losing my mind because it's terrible offense. And I think to myself, what is going on here? I've never seen Michigan do this ever. And it finally pops into my head that everybody on the floor is dead tired.
Yes.
So they are kind of marshaling their strength for a late push, and they just can't do it at this moment. And it's not just one guy, which I think is probably going to happen on a number of offensive positions. It's everybody. And Derek Walton puts the team on his back. You know, Minnesota pushes back to tie after being down 16 or something. And it just feels like this is where their legs catch up to them and they exit the tournament.
Yeah, especially since they're going against a series of teams who have played one fewer game than them.
Yep.
Every step of the way.
And Derek Walton just did it his damn self.
Yeah, I mean, he can just rise up off that high screen, and there is really nothing you can do about it unless you're in his shorts the moment he gets off of that pick.
Well, and that's one of the things that Michigan really adapted to after Purdue started the switch everything kind of,
yeah,
where it's just like, you know what, I can just take a rise up three here against the big, and it's going to go down.
Yeah, there were a couple times where the announcers had, especially once it switched over to CBS, and they just haven't watched as much Michigan basketball this year, where they were kind of calling out some Walton shots as not great when we have seen him rise up and take those shots and they go in at a clip that is totally acceptable for him to keep taking those. I mean, there were a couple of three-pointers that might have been questionable, yeah, but they questioned more than they should have.
Well, and there were a couple of those, like, Burke-like turnaround, like, looks really slick, looks like a bad shot, and it goes down, and you're like, oh. And they weren't going down.
Yeah.
But I think that was mostly because of the tiredness again. So Michigan's jump shooting in this tournament was not great. And
yeah,
there's a pretty obvious reason why. And Michigan managed to overcome that. They overcame 6-25 from three against Purdue.
Which, if you told me that stat heading in, it's like, we're going to lose by 20.
Well, they got more offensive rebounds than Purdue.
Yeah. There was a lot of weirdness in that game.
It's just a completely bizarre stat. And, I mean, they managed to make it work. And that was not a white-collar win.
No. No, it was not.
And neither was the Wisconsin game, because in the second half of that game, you know, they come out of the locker room, and Wisconsin has, like, 2 points in the first 8 minutes. And Michigan's scuffling, and their shots aren't going down, and it just doesn't matter because their defense is too tough for Wisconsin.
Yeah. I mean, it was another game where there was nothing from the perimeter, but also there was nothing inside. Hap went 6-for-16.
6-for-16, and he had, like,
and this was not like, it didn't seem like it was fluky.
No,
that he missed that many shots. And they were contesting shots at the rim. They were denying post position.
We were talking about this. I mean, the opening shot that he has against Mo Wagner, where he's scooping up and Raftery's like talking about how that's his shot from the 1950s. That's great defense.
Yeah. If you're taking a 1950s shot, like, Michigan's probably going to beat you.
Well, and he got like the Wisconsin chest into him.
Yeah.
So have we mentioned the refereeing in the title game yet?
We have not. We should praise it.
It was good.
Yeah.
Like, I was a little bit irritated here and there at some calls, but once I realized that, okay, they're just not going to call the Wisconsin chest, and Michigan was giving Wisconsin the chest as well.
Yes.
Then I was like, okay, now we can have a game where the fouls are actually fouls and nobody's sitting out unless they really deserve it. I mean, Michigan sits Wagner in this game not because of foul trouble, but by choice.
Yeah, because, Wilson was being more effective and Simpson was the better guy to have on the floor, or Robinson in some of those moments.
So. Yeah.
They were actually able to just kind of go with the lineup they wanted and not being forced into it.
And that's really something for me, because, you know, the one, like, fear factor I have for this team is, like, when Martindale comes in and immediately gets dunked on.
Yeah.
And this team was able to pull him after that happened twice in the Wisconsin game.
Yeah, he only ends up with 4 minutes in that game.
And he comes in, he gets dunked on, and then they pull him out and they run DJ at the five. And that I mean, that really patches the main roster hole that Michigan has.
Yeah, I mean, it's still they still need to make sure that Wagner stays out of foul trouble in the tournament.
Yes.
That's going to be the key every game going forward.
But they do have a backup plan now that I think is workable.
Yeah, they have a patch that they can roll with, and that was not something we had really all year until this point.
And against some of these teams that they're going to be coming up against, they probably can get away with Mark Dinal for longer periods of time.
And they did that, like against Minnesota, they were able to do that a couple times quite successfully. He did pack the crap out of Jordan Murphy, which was rather unexpected.
He always has these blocks that just come out of nowhere, and you're like, oh!
Yeah, he had the one against Happ earlier this year, in the Wisconsin game at Chrysler, so he is making that a bit of a trademark, the wildly unexpected block shot.
Well, I mean, he got back at least a portion of what he gave up against the Gophers. So
yeah, he has been more confident at least popping out and taking those pick-and-pop threes.
I mean,
and they need him, like, the thing they need to keep the offense going is not even necessarily him making them, just him posing that threat, and he's been rolling so much that it's nice to see them just sticking with the five-out thing when he gets out there, because they hadn't really been doing that lately. No, the offense would get bogged down.
Kind of the one enduring question mark about his career is why he hasn't been that 3.5 threat, he's at like 50% on the year. I mean, his stroke is very slow. It takes him forever to get
it. It does take him a while to launch.
But
the whole thing with those threes, yeah, he's 8 for 17 this season. So when he does get them off, they tend to go.
I mean, I remember it was during the Minnesota game, and Wagner was on the bench with foul trouble, and I'm like, dude, Dinal has to take those. And like he took, like he passed one up, and I'm like, nah, it's not. Like, if you're out there and you're going to be a functional part of the offense, that's got to be your shot.
Yeah, that's one of those where, like, even if he misses it, like, at least you're setting it up so that the other team still has to respect that you have shooters spreading the entire floor. That's why this offense works.
I have a hunch he might get some open looks against Oklahoma State, but that's another segment.
Yeah, different segment.
Finally, Duncan Robinson didn't really have a huge impact, but you know, his presence really opened things up for other players, especially against Wisconsin. So there were a number of takes to the interior where you got DJ Wilson going from the three-point line to the bucket, and one of the reasons that can happen is because everybody is five out and they have a no-leave Robinson policy.
Yeah, and he's been great also on cuts to the bat, like the little backdoor cut. Michigan got a three off of that where they throw it into him. The defense collapses down. He just kicks it back out, and I think it was Irvin ended up with a just blitheringly wide open look.
Well, he was a frequent participant in that segment of the Minnesota game where it was just back cut, back cut, back cut.
Yes.
With Lynch out of the picture, and Minnesota doesn't know what they're doing when they don't have that guy back there.
And he made a few like surprising little plays. Like he had against Purdue, he pulled down an offensive rebound and then just dribbles back out to the corner and drills a three.
That's right.
Which was like, man, that was like awesomely mean from Duncan Robinson. And then in Wisconsin, he has the other wildly unexpected block of this tournament by just packing Zach Showalter when he tries to pull up from three.
That wasn't
a shot clock violation.
A huge surprise.
I mean, he was able to time the closeout because of the shot clock situation, but still fun.
You can measure Showalter's lift in millimeters.
Yeah, and Duncan Robinson is 6'8". We do tend to forget that because he spends so much time floating.
And we talked a lot about Irvin's defense earlier in the podcast, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Duncan Robinson is now passable.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are still going to be times where guys get by him on the perimeter, but Michigan is now more set up that's kind of like they're okay with that anyway.
But he's done a pretty decent job of cutting off drivers.
Yeah.
No, I never thought I would see the day, but like he gets switched onto a point guard and the point guard goes at him and it's like, that worked out okay.
Yeah. No, he's learning how to use his length a lot more. And he's actually holding up in the post okay too. He's pulled down some like rather manly rebounds. There's been a lot of things that have been kind of shocking about this team's transformation, and Duncan Robinson becoming a half-decent defender is high on the list.
I mean, there was the aneurysm of leadership team when they're 1-6 in the Big Ten, and you're like, this coaching thing isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
But I think this is a bigger turnaround than that team.
I mean,
because
it's just tougher to go from, like, okay to really dang good.
Right, yeah.
Than from, like, pretty abjectly bad to decent. And that's the jump that this team made, the former jump. This team went from all right to holy pants.
Yeah, they went from like one standard deviation below the mean to one standard deviation above it during the aneurysm of leadership. And they went from like zero to plus two.
I mean, they're basically two plays away from being on a 12-game winning streak right now.
And one of those losses was like the 41 free throw game at Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. I said plays. Like, yeah. If that technical doesn't get called and then the Northwestern Hail Mary doesn't happen.
Well, that's still like a 50-50 game.
That's true. It is heading into overtime. Yeah. But I think Michigan's better than Northwestern.
So they're
like
good.
Their chances. They're a good team.
I mean, this is half the season now that they're a top 10 team in the country. And
yeah, this has been a pretty decent chunk.
It's unfortunate that they managed to get a 7 seed instead of creeping up to that 6 line.
Yeah,
or, I don't know, the 5 that Minnesota somehow got.
You know. Ugh. Did they just put all the Big Ten teams into a hat?
What they did, someone at Minnesota deserves a medal because their
RPI gaming.
Yes, it was magnificent.
Yeah.
Like, I talk about this every year, and I actually I have a post for tomorrow about this. Minnesota, their RPI non-conference strength of schedule is number 27. Their KenPom is like 208. So they put together a about average non-conference schedule. 208 is average-ish. And they're being rewarded like they have a top, like a 90th percentile one.
And the key is avoiding those boat anchors.
Yeah, and I do owe an apology to whoever did Michigan's schedule. They actually did a decent job this year. So they're plus 80 in that metric. One of the takeaways from this post is that the RPI non-conference strength of schedule metric is terrible.
Oh, yeah. Like, when you were posting numbers in the Slack chat, and I was appalled at most of them.
Like, the average deviation between that and your KenPom non-conference strength of schedule is 60 spots. 62, if you want to be pedantic.
Which is just insane.
It's insane. It's insane. And so there are a lot of opportunities there to set yourself up well in the postseason. And Minnesota took advantage of them. And the NCAA, if they tell you that they're not going to rely so heavily on RPI,
they are lying liars who are lying.
They are. All right. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the future or possibly barbecue.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 1161358.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGoBlog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/mgoblog. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734
734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hey, Ace, have you ever been in a car accident?
I have not.
You have to have been in a car accident for the purposes of this ad.
I apologize for not being in a car accident.
No, you say you've been in a car accident.
I've been in a car accident.
Now, what happened to your insurance rates?
They were skyrocketed through the roof.
Thank you. This is a professional podcast.
This is a very professional podcast.
Well, if you are in a car accident and your rates have skyrocketed, the state of Michigan actually allows you to avoid this by taking a defensive driver's class. And Defensive Drivers Group will provide that to you at a low cost. At DefensiveDriversGroup.com, take their online course, complete it as 99% of their applicants do, and get the states of Michigan, California, and New Jersey to wipe your record clean. There are no hidden fees, and the founders, who are both Michigan grads, will give you $5 off for mentioning this ad. Just say MGO Blog. Moving in slow motion. Michigan is in the NCAA tournament, which is a nice turnaround from what we thought midseason.
Yeah, yeah. When we were counting down games for different reasons than we are now.
And they have a bad draw that's kind of an okay draw.
Yeah, it was a lot worse at first blush than I think it is now.
Because you look at it and you're like, oh, we drew the number one offense in the country, a team that is basically ranked exactly where we are in KenPom, and then Louisville in the second round, and you're like, oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
But then you start kind of looking a little bit closer at especially Oklahoma State, and this looks like the kind of team that gets dictated to by Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, they play high tempo, and usually high tempo teams struggle against B-line teams because B-line teams are exceptionally good at dictating the pace of the game.
Yes.
Especially the type of team that Oklahoma State is, which is high pressure trying to force turnovers so they can get out and run. That does not go well. I mean, if you remember back to the Chaka Smart Havoc teams trying to handle B-line squads, this is a different team than that.
Yes.
But man, those teams got ran out of the building.
And that's my greatest take of all time, by the way. I was like, we really want to see VCU in the tournament.
And people were like, no, not Chaka Smart, not Havoc. And actually, that worked out well.
It worked out very well. And so this is a team that is probably the worst defense in the tournament, at least in terms of at-large teams.
Yes.
Number 133 on KenPom. For comparison's sake, at Michigan's nadir after the Nebraska game, post Maverick, they were 184.
Yeah.
So this is a slightly better defense than that thing that you were looking at midseason that was disgusting.
Yeah. They are 275th in effective field goal percentage against.
And they have not improved very much over the course of the season like Michigan has. If you go on the Torvik site or if you go click on the conference only metric for on KenPom, they're giving up like something like 115 points per 100 possessions in Big 12 play.
113. 10th out of 10.
So they're the worst defense
in the Big 12.
In the Big 12. And part of that is because they're feeding their offense by sacrificing their defense.
Yes.
They crash the boards really hard, they gamble for steals, so like part of the reason their offense is so good is because their defense is so bad. So
there is a trade-off. I mean, Michigan's done a little bit of the same thing where they've become more aggressive at forcing turnovers so that they can turn that into offense.
Or just prevent people from getting shots.
Or stopping teams from getting post buckets.
But I watched the Kansas-Oklahoma State game on YouTube, and man, that was a jarring experience.
Bit night and day from Michigan-Wisconsin.
It was like two different sports. It was insane. It looked like rollerball. They get out and they run.
Yeah.
And the good thing for Michigan is they are very prepared to handle teams that do this. They only give up like 18% of their possessions transition shots, and they're barely worse at defending them than they are in the half court.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan is not a team that crashes the offensive glass, so they're not letting teams run out that way. They don't turn the ball over, so they're not letting teams run out that way. Mm-hmm. unless you're getting long rebounds off of threes, there's not a lot of ways to really get out and run against Michigan without really forcing it.
And if you try to force it against Michigan, that's just, you're just extending your defense, tiring your team out, and not really getting much.
Yeah, that would be the ideal way for this game to play out.
It would be. The one problem that Michigan is going to have in this game is that Oklahoma State crashes the offensive.
They are going to try to play volleyball.
Mm-hmm. They're number six on KenPom. They send three guys to the board most times. And their starting center, who's, what's his first name? Wilton? Walton?
Mitchell.
Mitchell. Same thing. Mitchell Solomon, who is a high-energy player, but not a particularly skilled one. He'll take some jumpers from the free throw line, but they have no post-up game. He's 7.7 fouls per 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is a lot, and he's one of the best offensive rebounders in the country. I believe these are correlated.
Yeah, you can anticipate some over-the-back calls probably in this game. He's also just, you mentioned the lack of skill. He's third in the country in offensive rebound rate, and he's barely shooting over 50% on twos.
Yeah. So he,
and like a bucket load of those have to be easy second chance opportunities.
And so everything he gets is either assisted or a putback. And it's, he kind of is what he is. And I don't think you're going to see him have much ability to put like Mo or DJ in foul trouble.
Yeah. And we've seen, especially Wilson against Wisconsin, was a different player on the defensive boards than we've seen a lot of this year. He's been decent in that regard, but he kind of fell off in Big Ten play, and in that game, he was an animal.
Yeah, and Irvin did a good job, too, so like maybe they can carry that over to the tournament. It's just one game, but they did a pretty good job for most of the Big Ten tournament.
And the other thing that Wilson did exceptionally well in the Big Ten tournament that should carry over to this game is he is throwing incredible outlet passes, sometimes out beyond half court, just immediately upon getting the rebound, wheeling, finding Walton.
Yeah.
It's remarkable that they seem to have some sort of mind meld at this point where Wilson knows where Walton is at all times. But they've gotten a lot of transition buckets off of defensive rebounds, which they have been good at all year, but they weren't, there wasn't nearly the frequency that there was in the Big Ten tournament.
And this is a team that is going to give you those opportunities.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that's really nice about that is Michigan is like 11th in the country at transition field goals.
Yeah, they're awesome when they run out, because they both have a lethal three-point shooting attack when they get out, and especially when Duncan Robinson's on the court. Their transition, the three-point game is tremendous. But they can also, they've got two bigs who can run too.
Yeah. So Oklahoma State, it's in their DNA to play fast. Michigan is a good team to combat that.
Yes.
And then Michigan is lethal when they get in transition that Oklahoma State gives up an above-average number of opportunities at.
Yeah.
This looks like a pretty baked-in structural advantage for Michigan.
The fear is that Juwan Evans, their lead guard, is quick.
He's very quick.
He's exceptionally quick. He gets to the basket a lot. And that would be the one way where you get the wrong Michigan guys in foul trouble. Derek Walton's on-ball defense has not been tremendous.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think that he's going to be a great pick to stay in front of him.
I would like to see Rock get that matchup most likely.
And that's very feasible because their shooting guard is 5'11".
Yes.
So listed at 5'11".
Yeah, so Derek Walton could probably take that. And he's a perimeter-oriented guy, so a really good one.
Yeah.
The guy's a sniper. But that takes Derek Walton's job from try to stay in front of this man who is going to try to run you to death to just don't let this guy get open.
I can't tell you how many lol what that's awful shots I saw Phil Forte hit in these three games.
Yeah, like, he's got range.
Remember like the Syracuse game where Spike is just reining it in?
Yes, because he just decides to extend the court a little bit.
Yeah, he hit so many of those against Baylor that he had a shot fake from 30 feet that got a guy in the air.
And that is actually a bit of a worry with Michigan, is with how hard they're closing out and trying to run guys off the line.
Yeah.
If you have guys who can extend out and threaten from that range where they can pump, step in, and still take a three, that can be
it's
a bit of a concern.
News, yes. He's a good player. Like,
so they're going to have to be on their game on the perimeter on defense.
I mean, the one thing is that if you are putting Walton on him, he's probably quick enough to just guard him straight up, even up at 30 feet. Like,
yeah.
So I think they're going to try that, and I think you might see a little bit more X than you would otherwise.
Because he's the guy to put, like, just have him live in somebody's shirt.
Yeah, like, if there's one guy on this team who can keep Evans out of the lane, it is X.
Yeah.
So
And now, and now that he's become a decent offensive player at this point.
A passable offensive
player. Yeah, I mean, low volume, but with the team clicking the way it is around him.
When he does things, they're good things. They're just not frequent.
Yes. Yeah. And they have enough guys. I mean, there was a... I can't remember which team it was against. One of these Big Ten tournament games. they had Simpson and Donnell on the court at the same time, which means it must have been Minnesota, probably.
Yeah.
And they have a possession where they run a couple Simpson-Donnell pick and rolls that don't really get anybody to bite on anything.
No.
And then Simpson just kind of dumps it off to DJ Wilson, who drives into the lane and pivots and gets a bucket. And I was like, oh, well, that's a nice bailout.
Yeah, and
they have the guys who can do that now.
They had another, like, ex-DJ Wilson pick and roll against Wisconsin that worked out really well.
Yeah, Simpson made a pretty absurd pass on that one.
Yeah, that was kind of Darius Morris-esque.
He found an angle that did not look like it was there.
So he's coming along, and you might see a little bit more of him. And then the other thing that really kind of worries me in this game is that Zach Ervin's new status as a defensive stopper will be extremely tested.
Yeah, Jeffrey Carroll is a very effective player.
He lights up the top like 500, or it's a top 300 on KenPom. Like, he's got a number for almost everything, which means he's a really good player.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, it's literally every offensive category except usage rate and assist rate.
He's top 300.
He's ranked somewhere
in the country. He's like a 80, 60, 43 shooter, which is crazy.
Yeah, no, that is pretty much exactly what he is.
Yeah.
I get the sense you've been looking at their Ken Pop.
I wrote a post today about this, and I'm like, this guy is the truth. And
yes,
if Michigan can hold him down and make him take ineffective shots, they'll be in good shape, but that's easier said than done.
Yeah.
So Evans is their shot creator. He's their only shot creator.
But he's exceptional. He's third in the country in assist rate. So he's creating a lot.
Well, assist rate is kind of like that, because assist rate, like, if you get an assist, you've taken away the opportunity for someone else to get one. So
there's a bit of, it's like when Cassius Winston runs the offense for Michigan State, and the ball is only going through him.
So, I mean, just shut him down. You got to hedge correctly. You got to make sure you don't get split. You don't got to make sure you don't pick up cheap fouls on the perimeter. And I feel Michigan will not do this that well, but well enough.
Yeah, I am a little concerned about, like, if they're running a bunch of high screens and Mo Wagner, who's been doing a really good job of the super hard hedge lately, gets a little overexcited on that against a dude who's quicker than he's used to.
Yeah.
Could pick up some ticky-tack ones out there. And so, you'd hate to see him getting fouls 25 feet away from the basket in a tournament game.
I mean, the good thing is that their bigs are probably not going to be posting him up and threatening him like that.
So yes.
He might have a little bit more leeway to pick up some, I'm going to try to disrupt their offense fouls.
And then, and they're also playing against a team that does not have the overwhelming size where you'd be worried about slipping DJ Wilson at center and
You can definitely get away with DJ at center.
Yeah, and Irvin is the four.
Yeah.
And roll with that if they have to.
I mean, the only problem there is then who's checking
Carroll.
Carroll.
Yeah. Duncan Robinson, defensive stopper. Come on.
I mean, they play a 6'8 stretch four who's a middling player, so Robinson can check him.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a game that Michigan can control the tempo of and put them in situations where Michigan is getting as many transition opportunities as Oklahoma State is. And then if that is the case, Michigan is more efficient at field goals in every department.
Yeah.
And that's particularly important because this is a team, I just found this out today on Hoop Math. Michigan is the best team in the country at forcing opponents to take 2-point jumpers.
And that's been their whole strategy this year. I mean, obviously it is. It's working.
I can't believe that is the case in year one of Billy Donlin, but it is.
We have to complete the picture. We have to add that Michigan is also the best team at finishing at the rim in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's like,
it's because of volume.
Yeah,
in large part, it's because they pick their spots beautifully, but they also generate a ton of great looks at the rim. You get the difference between Beeline's offense and how it works, and how other offenses facing Michigan now are having to play. It's the most efficient shots in basketball versus the least.
Yeah, and they're giving up 40% on 2-point jumpers, which is bad. That is a bad number.
Yeah.
But it's still 0.8 points of possession, right?
Yeah.
So that's any 2-point jumper you can ever force.
That's a great defensive number if you can get there.
Unless it's like Isaac Haas from 4 feet. But
well, even then, he's only had middling success on that this year.
That is true. So if Michigan does get past Oklahoma State, Louisville, in all likelihood, veritably looms.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be Jacksonville State, unfortunately.
but go Jacksonvillians, is that what their nickname is? Probably.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Like the Troy Trojans of Troy?
I hope it's another one. I'm now refusing to check.
I think they're the Phoenix or something, actually. But
no, now you're making me check.
What are they? Drum roll.
The Gamecocks.
Ugh.
Lame.
Not the... No. this version of Louisville will look familiar to anyone who saw the national championship game. They have a very large man in the middle who is an excellent defensive player.
Mangak Mathiang? I'm going to probably just brutalize that name.
Yeah, you probably did, but at least I didn't try.
Yeah. Getting thrown to the wolves here.
That would have been so much worse.
That's part of my job.
But so they have that kind of jumping jack shot blocker in the middle.
It's the classic Louisville big man.
Yeah, he's exactly that guy who's been there ever since Rick Pitino showed up. One thing that they are pretty bad at, though, is shooting.
Yes, surprisingly not great at it. 131st in three-point shooting, 132nd in two-point shooting, and not good at all. 236th in free throw percentage in the country. So they're not really lighting it up. They don't really have a guy. They have one dude, Quentin Snyder, who's a 39% guy who takes almost exactly half his shots from beyond the arc.
Yeah.
So that's somebody to be concerned about, but there isn't a 40% shooter who's a regular on the team who takes a high number of shots from beyond the arc. And none of their high usage guys crack 50% from inside the arc.
So it's kind of a rough offense that, again, gets by on a lot of transition opportunities and rebounds.
Yeah, they are 15th in the country in offensive rebounding. They have their classic Louisville big.
Yep.
And a couple other guys who hit the boards as well. And then they have a rather suffocating defense, which is
typical.
What you would expect from a Rick Pitino team.
And turnovers?
Like above average a little bit. So that is something that might play to Michigan's advantage, is that they are slightly turnover reliant. But mostly they've just been tremendous at, they're the sixth best shot blocking team in the country.
Obviously.
Uh-huh. Because, yeah, Louisville big.
Because of what's his name?
Don't do that to me, man.
I forgot his name.
Mangak Mathiang.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Anyway, they do seem to have a bit of three-point luck on defense. They're not great at preventing attempts.
Right.
They have a very low percentage against the made so far this year.
I kind of feel like when you block so many shots on the inside that there's a correlation there that you're taking more bad three-pointers.
That is probably true. Michigan's key will be like trying to generate those decent looks. And getting them in motion. But it's tough to predict how a team is going to be able to defend Michigan because you just don't see teams going against five-out teams.
Mm-mm.
And so Mathiang is going to have to get drawn away from the basket at some point. Or they're going to defend Michigan in a way unknown to basketball kind that we haven't seen so far this year. But he's going to get involved in some high pick-and-roll situations. And at that point, Michigan's going to be able to run their offense.
I'm kind of worried that someone's going to throw like a 2-3 zone at Michigan for big stretches.
Man, do you remember the times that other teams have tried to throw out 2-3 zones against B-line teams?
They just
murder it, man. Like, I would be... If Louisville plays a 2-3 zone against Michigan, I will be standing and cheering from press row.
I kind of disagree with that, because I remember the Syracuse game. Michigan hit a lot of bad shots in that game.
But they will be able to extend the range. They'll put Duncan Robinson on the court.
Sure.
They'll still run high screens with Derek Walton, and just you're either going to throw your zone way out of whack or Walton's going to get, like, step-in three-point shots that he is going to hit at a rate that makes playing a 2-3 unsustainable.
I don't know. Whenever Michigan goes up against a 2-3, I feel like they just kind of look at it for 20 seconds and then...
Well, because they're like, why would you possibly do this? And it takes them one possession, and then they settle in, and then they rain fire.
We need numbers on this because I disagree.
You're wrong, man.
All right.
I've watched this team for 5 years in detail. You are wrong on this one.
I guess
I would be so happy if they played a 2-3 zone.
I guess Ace feels somewhat strongly about this. But this is like this Louisville team is a very good team, but I think this is a coin flip game because Michigan is very good, as we just said, at forcing 2-point jumpers. Those are bad shots. They are especially bad shots for Louisville.
Yeah, and this is not a team that would necessarily be super averse to taking those either.
Right. So this it all comes down to, I think, defensive rebounding for Michigan. If they can get to shot parity, if they can get there, and unless they just have the worst shooting day of the season, I think that they can beat this team. Especially because that shot blocking presence that Louisville's defense is based around, you're going to see something like we saw in the Purdue game, where that guy has to play on the perimeter, and it's how's that going to go for him?
Yeah, I mean, or Minnesota, but like Reggie Lynch, best shot blocker in the country, didn't have one.
Zero.
Because he wasn't in position to do anything like that.
So I was upset at this draw.
So was I. I was upset at a lot of things during the tournament selection show because what the hell?
I mean, but these are two good teams, but I think they're two good matchups for Michigan. Like, I think that Louisville game is not as difficult as it should be usually if it's like the number 6 versus number 24 team in the country.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at drawing a 2 seed, this is probably the one, maybe not the one that Michigan would want to draw.
Yeah.
But it works out pretty well. They're not getting a team that could have been a 1 seed. This is a tier below that.
Any team that relies so heavily on blocking shots, I think, is a good matchup for Michigan's offense.
Because and as long as the big men stay out of foul trouble, teams that rely offensively on crashing the glass, they're just asking for Michigan to turn up the transition game.
Yep.
And both of these teams are like that.
I mean, the trick is not having half their misses become offensive rebounds.
Yes.
Which happens.
Every once in a while. Michigan's had some games where they've been able to overcome that.
I mean, they have. I mean, they did in the Purdue game. The Minnesota game.
Yeah.
So I think there's a real good shot that this team gets to the second weekend. And then from there, it's like, bring them on, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if they get past it too, let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a team that has been playing like a 2 for half the season.
Yes.
Right?
Like, I mean, definitely if... Like, I'm sure Louisville fans aren't happy about this draw.
No.
That the Michigan fell to a 7, and I guess didn't fall. Michigan rose to a 7, yeah, according to Mark Hollis, who's a crazy person. If I'm a Cardinals fan, I'm not pleased with that draw.
Yeah, and it's in Indianapolis, which is very close to Kentucky, as you might know.
And also Kentucky's going to be there.
Kentucky's in the pod.
I'm afraid to go outside in Indianapolis. There's St. Patrick's Day on Friday.
Oh my God!
It's gonna be horrifying. I am going to spend the entirety of the weekend either in the arena or like just trying to survive.
Just wearing nothing that is red or blue.
No. I'm gonna pack like all or black green. Or gray clothing. Yeah. That's still my black. Still might be construed as me being a Louisville fan. So I might have to pick out some.
Yeah, that's
good. I'm gonna wear like hot pink the whole weekend.
Fuchsia. I think fuchsia is your best bet. Do we want to complain about the selection committee, or was that?
I mean, I think it's worth complaining about.
So I mentioned Minnesota's non-conference schedule,
yes,
which we think is the main reason they're a 5 and Wisconsin is an 8. And I just don't understand how you look at their seasons without, if you don't look at the RPI focus, Wisconsin has 3 games against very good teams. Minnesota has 3 games against very good teams. And then Wisconsin has like 4 games against middling power conference opponents. Like,
yeah,
Oklahoma, which isn't very good this year, and Tennessee, which isn't very good this year. And those teams finish 14 and 18, 16 and 16, that kind of thing. And Wisconsin gets nailed in their non-conference schedule. And instead, Minnesota plays teams that are like 20-11 in bad conferences.
They lose their only game away from home against a good team.
Yeah. The teams that Wisconsin beat in the non-conference schedule are collectively much more impressive than Minnesota's.
Yeah.
Wisconsin finishes a game ahead in the Big Ten schedule.
They make the final.
They go a game further in the Big Ten tournament. And I was expecting that Wisconsin would be like a 6 or something, and Minnesota would be an 8.
I think pretty much everybody was expecting Wisconsin would be a 6.
And there's really only one way to explain that weirdness, and that is that scamming the RPI in the non-conference works like a mother.
It really does.
And that's disappointing, because this was the year when they actually literally talked to Ken Pomeroy in January.
Yeah, and they've been throwing out all this stuff about how they're moving away from RPI.
Yeah.
Because RPI is terrible.
Or they should at least be adjusting RPI, or when
using it as one data point among several, as opposed to, I mean, clearly favoring that over the other metrics that are much more refined.
Well, I just don't get how they seeded the Big Ten at all.
Yeah, that's the one where I get that like seeding 68 teams is tough, but when you have just the group of 6 or 7 teams from within one conference to work with,
yeah,
and you're throwing something out as nonsensical as they did. I don't understand what process produced that.
Yeah, like Wisconsin as an 8 and Michigan State as a 9 is completely insane.
And Maryland is a 6.
Yeah. And
Minnesota's a 5. I mean, Minnesota's probably the most inexplicable seed in that whole one.
I still think Michigan State as a 9 is crazy. They're 19-14. They only beat Wichita State in the non-conference, and
yeah,
Wichita State was a 10 seed. Like, they didn't even give them any credit for that, right?
No.
Like, but Michigan State actually successfully gained the RPI as well, so they have a terrible record, but because they got so much RPI boost from just playing a team like Duke, they get to look shinier than they actually are.
Yeah.
And
quality losses.
And Graham Couch would have them overturn that and be like,
swack forever.
Yeah. They successfully gained the RPI, and I hope Michigan takes that to heart and continues to do what they did this year. They're plus 80 in my did you game the RPI metric.
That Furman game was a great one.
Furman. And that's the perfect kind of opponent. It's hard to predict these people always, but it's a good...
I mean, just don't schedule the swack.
It's a good shot.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back with a gimmicky top five.
In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools and with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
As the holiday season rolls in and we enter a new year of Michigan basketball and hockey, it's important to make good choices. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com.
Places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
It's Gimmicky Top 5 time, and we are at the Huel studio right now, so we are bringing in Jason from Huel. How are you doing?
Good.
Is it jarring that we've given your company a name that is not actually its name?
It's a little jarring for our marketing director. Not for me.
Human Element. Let's get that out there.
Human Element, yes. Yeah. We should say
She would greatly appreciate it.
Yes.
Very professional podcast.
Just lying on the money. That's what's going on. So if you've ever driven past their building on Division, it says Human Element on it.
Not Huel.
For now. Right.
There isn't a screen cap from Breaking Bad on the front window or anything. Not to suggest that
for
maybe
now.
They should do that.
Yet. Yeah, the companies that advertise with always eventually regret it. Advertise with MGO Blog! Our gimmicky top five is a simple one. It is merely the top five moments, our favorite moments of the season. Now that there are favorite moments to be had in this wonderful turnaround.
Isn't that nice?
Honestly, yes.
Yeah, it is.
Should have probably had something better to say than yes. But here we are.
It's like me starting a podcast.
Ace, I swear to God. I only hope that they cannot deduce from the recording that I have choked you to death. Very professional podcast. I'm not going to choke you to death.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'm out of arm's reach, at least, at the moment.
You're,
so
you're my favorite,
I'll get a head start.
Ace, number five.
Just the whole MSG weekend. You know, they blow out Marquette.
Yeah.
They blow out SMU. And in that SMU game, we get a taste of the Derek Walton that we've seen over the last 2 months.
We get, the DJ Wilson. He looked amazing as a defensive player.
We start to see a little bit of his versatility. Walton goes 7-for-12 on threes against SMU. And it's like, okay, if this is the guy,
yeah,
then we're going to be really good. And then we just have to pretend that in the next 2 months didn't happen. And it's a wonderful just straight line all the way through the season.
So kind of the opposite of the Big Ten votes for all conference player.
Pretty much, yeah. Ooh. Hey-o.
Still bitter about that. Yeah. Jason, you're number five.
It was the same thing, the whole tournament in New York. I mean, it was kind of we got to see what this team could be, and then they kind of disappeared for a little bit.
My number five is the DJ Wilson exclamation in the Big Ten championship game.
The windmill.
Well, he has the dunk where no, you don't need to take this shot. The shot clock's off, whatever. And then he gets a second runout opportunity, which is just icing on the cake, and he screws up the windmill, and it goes in anyway. And I just felt complete.
The bench reaction from that is amazing. Yes. 'Cause they're all just standing there looking at him like, you've got to be kidding me, dude. Nobody celebrates, and they're in wild celebration mode at that
right,
moment.
Yeah.
And they're all just looking at him and laughing. It's beautiful.
So I thought that was the cherry on top of the Big Ten tournament Sunday.
That was pretty wonderful.
Ace, number four.
Mo Wagner just absolutely going off against Purdue in the regular season game. And then actually for me, what stood out from that game was Matt Painter's post-game press conference, where he talks through in exacting detail about why Michigan's offense is impossible to defend.
Yeah.
And to hear a head coach, first of all, be so open about how X's and O's work, to the point where he actually stopped in the middle of that presser and asked whether we wanted to hear any of this. And I'm sitting in the back please keep talking. He basically writes an entire post for me.
Yeah.
Lays down the blueprint for how Michigan's going to play out the rest of the season. And it's played out that way. It was a wonderful, it was just great to hear that. And it was great to have someone articulate exactly why Michigan's offense is such a killer.
Dockich did the Michigan-Purdue game, and he mentioned that. He was like, if Painter is ever talking about basketball in your vicinity, go listen, because he will actually explain stuff to you.
Yeah, that was by far the best opposing coach presser, especially after a loss.
Yeah.
Tom Crean was 20 minutes late, showed up for 2 minutes, didn't say anything except a bunch of angry stuff and left.
He was kind of hot after that one.
Yeah, well, he's Tom Crean. Let's just say that Matt Painter post-game press conferences are better than Tom Crean post-game press conferences.
Jason, you're number four.
Beating State at home badly. That was great. I love that day.
Short and sweet and to the point. That is also my number four, but I was a little bit more specific. I went with the Lowell MSU first half. And especially Tom, they have this shot of Tom Izzo leaving the court after the first half where he just looks like on the verge of ripping out the heart of a Michigan student.
Well, and he has to, like, sadly pick up the basketball that rolls over to him and throw it back to an official and then walk up the tunnel. And then in the shot that they show, there's, like, the student, like, there's actually two different Izzo heads in the stands in the shot that they show where, like, he's, like, really angry that they're holding up. It was just perfect to see him, like, morosely walking by as someone's holding up, like, pissed off Izzo.
It's like a Fellini shot or something. And also, like, this was a really important turning point in Michigan season because, like, two games before that, they go to the Breslin, and they have one of those halves that they seem to have at the Breslin Center every time they play there.
It's just a total stinker.
Yeah, we're just, like, on offense, they don't get within the three-point line until there's 5 seconds on the clock on every first half possession. Like, I have no idea how that was an eight-point game.
I'm looking at it now, and I still don't know.
It felt like a 20-point game, and for them to come back at Chrysler and just blow their doors off was both very, very rewarding and important for their season. Ace, your number three.
Well, we can move ahead pretty quickly because we just covered my number three.
All right. Jason, your number three.
Beating IU in Bloomington, and specifically Tom Crean getting knocked over.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, my God.
That was a good one. I missed that one, too.
Oh, thank you, Jason. That was critical inclusion. Mo Wagner blowing up Tom Crean.
He's had a couple of
he blew up a ref.
Yeah, he did that. That was Wagner's revenge.
Well, he was actually that was a well officiated game, so I didn't.
It was, but still. that's been a long brewing thing.
Oh yes, he's probably got blood oaths against most of the Big Ten referees. My number three is Walton as Chauncey Billups. So this not only kind of covers his development into the best point guard in the Big Ten, but also the fact that he's just rising up for transition triples. You know, when I was watching the Pistons during that Ben Wallace Billups era, my favorite thing about Chauncey Billups is occasionally he would just pull up with 25 seconds on the shot clock, but not possible. 18 seconds on the shot sure. clock.
Different league.
Yeah, and just drain one in someone's face. And Walton never makes them, but I still like that he takes them because I am a stupid person. Can we talk about barbecue now?
No.
Ace, your number two.
The stunning late season emergence of Fred Wright Jones.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, it.
Number two, that's like... Oof.
I know. I'm probably riding the hive putting together these gift posts the last 2 days. Yeah. But, we have missed the bench mob element for about 3 years
now. Yeah, Dokic has kind of like toned it down.
He's chill. I mean, because he's now like basically an assistant coach.
Yeah, he's an adult now.
So, I don't think you can do like the dice roll and still have that like coaching credibility where you pull somebody aside and tell them how to like navigate a high screen.
Yeah, it's good to have one adult in the Dokic family.
This is going to get back to him. You know that, right?
I hope it does. I like Dokic, but I got to give him the stick.
I mean, We did call him our last podcast. We did say
we specifically pointed him out as a positive as a color commentator.
Yes. So now we'll say that it's nice that Andrew Dokic has become the adult in the Dokic family, and Fred Wright Jones has filled the void, especially over this last week.
Yes, he has been.
He's like half of the gift posts.
A constant delight.
Yes. So that's fun. And it's nice that he's like pocket size too. It just makes everything better.
That's going to get back to him.
Yeah. It is.
Jason, you're number two.
Zach Irvin driving the lane at the end of the Purdue game in the tournament to send it to overtime. I mean, that was great.
the I should never have doubted him aspect of that play was spectacular.
Yeah, and just that whole Big Ten tournament run for him was like a nice little redemption tour.
Yeah.
Especially, and kind of extending to more like the last 6 to 8 games of the season after that just 4-game stretch where he looked broken.
Yeah, he was awful in that Indiana game, and then it's like he's in the game 6 to 8 to 9 of actually being an efficient offensive player in addition to all the defense that he's providing. So that's a good one. My number two is Mo Wagner torching Purdue. I was in the stands for this one, and my wife was there, and my wife was just like, I feel bad for them.
Never feel bad for a team with Caleb Swanigan and Isaac Haas.
And I always give her this look, and you're like, she's always like, you should be happy, because whenever I feel bad for the opponent, it's going very well for Michigan. And that moment was also kind of a key eye-opening moment for Michigan in this season, where it's like, yes, this offense is Stauskas level.
Yeah.
Where how do you stop all of these people doing all these
and
things?
In a different way than the Stauskas offense, too.
I mean, it's a little bit more balanced. I mean, the Stauskas offense wasn't out of whack by any stretch of the imagination. But to get the kind of like shot not just taking but creating from the bigs is, that's, I mean, that's tough.
It's fun to watch, too.
It is, too. Ace number one.
Derek Walton's going Terminator, especially Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament. Just his repeated just pull-up threes off the high screen and then talking all the way back down the court.
With bonus single emoji tweet after the game.
Yeah, yeah. Jumping off of DJ Wilson's tweet about him getting snubbed was beautiful. So just, and really just the, ever since the Maverick Morgan incident, you saw something click in him, and he's talked about it.
Yeah,
he's been very open about the fact that he did not appreciate the insinuation that he might be soft.
Well, he kept saying, like, I grew up in Detroit.
Yeah, he's never been called soft in his life, and Maverick Morgan calls him soft, or at least does so indirectly, and he got pissed. And to hear him talk about it since then and to watch him play since then has been a delight.
Jason, you're number one.
Finally beating Wisconsin in a tournament game, and the moment when they were kind of stumbling and bumbling around with that rebound, when they shot the outlet pass down to Marr for the dunk, when it was, you knew it was over.
Yeah. Yeah. Another great moment from that game was the Marr three-pointer when
it... Friendly bounce.
Yeah, it goes like 8 feet off. And if you remember the game of the Troll Center, Hayes had one that was exactly like that. That was essentially the difference in the game. And to get that back... was a wonderful...
it's the Don Nelson shot.
The wonderful middle finger from the universe. Directed at somebody other than us.
Yeah.
When we played Wisconsin.
Nice when that doesn't happen. Like,
how much crap has happened when we play Wisconsin? All the crap.
There is still a karmic imbalance there, and it's not in our favor.
My number one is very vague, but I have a feeling that Ace is going to know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I just have listed the closeout.
Are you talking about the first possession of the Wisconsin?
No, I'm not. But I think you might be able to get it. It's Duncan Robinson. You don't remember this. So there's a period in the Michigan State game. I don't remember what the game was, but Duncan Robinson is flying out at a three-point shooter.
Oh, just that whole defensive rotation.
Yeah, the whole rotation.
Yes.
And then he knows that there's going to be an extra pass. And so he fakes towards that one guy, and then he runs towards the corner, runs that guy off the three, and they end up having a turnover. And that was kind of like,
That was like the seeing God moment of Michigan's defensive renaissance.
I was like, this could be a real thing that is really happening. And not only I, but you and UM Hoops all pulled this. Like, I wrote it in a game column. You wrote it in the recap. UM Hoops was one of the five key plays where it was just like, what has happened to this defense?
Yeah, you rarely see everybody pick up on a great defensive play and like the entire beat on that play on Twitter. Like, it wasn't even just like we're going back over the tape. It was like that moment was like, holy crap.
And that's like something that's even more subtle than the kind of subtle stuff that like a Sean Morris likes to point out.
Yeah, we're just talking about Duncan Robinson running off the ball.
Right, like he didn't even like touch the ball.
Yeah, and this is not him directly forcing a turnover. It's not him blocking a shot.
And it's Duncan Robinson, who everybody has been deriding as the worst defensive player that they've seen.
And not entirely undeservedly.
Possibly a little bit unfair, the amount of stick he's gotten for it.
Sure.
But, you know, he's developed to the point where he's making those kind of plays, and he continued doing that. Like, he got ISO'd up against Bryant McIntosh at the end of the Northwestern game twice, and
that'd be something we'd be talking about a lot more if that game goes the other way at the end, because their plan at the end of the game was to isolate Duncan Robinson, and it failed.
So I don't remember the opponent, but I remember the play, the closeout, where Michigan's defense really solidified the fact that they were not the 184 defense in the country and that they were actually good now. And boy, have they paid off on that.
Yeah, and that, I mean, the offense has been great, but that's been the difference this season, which is just wild.
They beat Purdue shooting 6-25 from three. How about that?
It's hard to fathom sometimes.
All right, so enjoy it, people. We're in the tournament. We have a great shot. I think the season is already a success. They have a banner. You know, you wish that they didn't have that point, that lull in the middle, but they've also kind of established that they're going to be good going forward. So I'm a happy man. How are you doing, Ace?
I'm watching that closeout right now.
Are you? Who's against?
It was against Purdue.
Purdue. It was against Purdue. All right.
This is fun.
So we're going to take one more break, come back, talk about barbecue. Ace can't tell if I'm serious. I'm not. This is the end of the podcast.
The
Thanks for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook, and I am boycotting barbecue forever. And it's nice that he's like pocket size too. It just makes everything better.